Hey, welcome back to the In Squash podcast. And this past October, squash in the Olympics finally came to be after decades of failed bids. The WSF and its team leading up to that were quietly confident and have since hardly rested on their laurels. 4 years from now, we'll finally see squash as an Olympic sport. And here to break it all down with me and other WSF initiatives, Zena Wooldridge is in the house, and this is her second appearance on the pod. She made an appearance on our Growing the Game podcast. I want to say that was about a year and a half ago. It might have been maybe earlier than that, but so we have plenty to catch up on. But I think the big chunk of our chat today will be LA 28 related. Before that, though, speaking of growing the game, let's talk Open Squash. And Open Squash is doing exactly that. Their mission is, of course, growing the game and making squash accessible to everyone. Open Squash currently sponsors the very best in the game: Gina Kennedy, Victor Huang, Hannah Craig, who's currently in the top 100 in the world and making moves upwards, and world number one and winner of six PSA events this season, Ali Farag, and he's taken on the role as Open Squash's senior advisor. Each summer, Open Squash puts on amazing clinics given by some of the game's great coaches. One of my favorites, legendary Harvard head squash coach Mike Way, and prior to that, he was world number one and one of the greatest of all time, Jonathan Powers, coach at that time. Former world number one and Drexel head coach Johnny White, along with Gina Kennedy, Victor Quint, Hannah Craig, and several other highly respected coaches will be putting on summer camps and clinics. And they've even recently added an intermediate clinic to the summer camps. So visit opensquash.org. That's www.opensquash.org. And sign up for the camp that fits your skill set needs. That's opensquash.org. Now, here we go. President of the WSF, episode 289, Zena Wooldridge.
Hello, Jerry. How are you?
Hi. Oh, nice to see you.
And you too.
Yeah. How's everything going?
Yeah, it's good. Thank you very much. Yes, it's, you know, busy. We're always busy. We're not doing our job if we're not kept busy, are we?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah, really busy these days over here as well, but extremely exciting with everything that's happened since the last time we saw each other and spoke. Just a huge congratulations. I haven't spoken to you really face-to-face like that, like this. So congratulations on the big LA 28 accomplishment. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
It has indeed. Yes, it has indeed. And, you know, I've sat kind of on the edge of that over a number of bids and felt the huge disappointment. So, yeah, it's a big one. It's a biggie for us.
Absolutely. Well, I think when we met the last time, it was our Growing the Game panel, and we had several excellent people on the panel, including yourself. And I think you keep in touch with a few of the guys that I brought together for that. I think at the time, it's not necessarily on the panel, but there might have been a couple there. There was a little bit of sort of, I would just say the sentiment was, we don't need squash. We don't need squash in the Olympics. And I think a lot of that's just sort of all those years of failed bids. And that was the sentiment of, I think, a lot of people, just disappointment, not necessarily that they don't want it to happen. But I guess, you know, at that time, I had the feeling that there was something that you knew that maybe perhaps we all didn't know, or you had a gut feeling, and you're not the only one who's had that gut feeling. That I'd spoken to. So leading up to that, what was sort of that gut feeling based on that might have been different from failed bids that had passed us by?
Yeah, it was probably, first of all, just worth saying that, you know, I'm I am often regarded as the eternal optimist, but it has to be that has to be also with a big dose of realism to it. So, you know, the Olympic bid, or should I say Olympic bid feasibility, is part of our strategy. And so, you know, it is an important part of important part of our vision going forward. But it has to be a realistic option because there was, I think, so much disappointment previously, and that hurt. That began to hurt people who had been through that process a number of times and come out on the wrong side. But I think, we have a responsibility as the International Federation. We have a responsibility to do the best thing for our sport. And so if we have the opportunity to go for the Olympics, and I think there was also a feeling, well, if we had the chance to go for Olympics, then we should really seriously think through why we shouldn't. And are there real reasons why we shouldn't? Because at the end of the day, even if we thought that Brisbane was a more realistic opportunity, we probably had to keep ourselves maintain a presence in there in the process to show that we are interested, rather than actually starting from a point of inertia potentially for Brisbane. So, I think there were lots of reasons why we should, despite the fact that certain people would have felt a reticence because of the pain from previous situation, previous bids. I think we also should consider the fact that every host city or host nation's proposition is different. They have their own strategy, and that's particularly the case since the IOC's changed the rules of the game such that actually the host organizing committee has the opportunity of proposing their own sports for just their edition, and then those sports that get onto the program then have the challenge of actually staying there, and the next and of course the next host will decide on their new sports before the delivery of the previous one. So we can't use LA, for example, as a platform to promote our bid for Brisbane 2032, because the decision will be made in 2030, probably 2027. So there's an aspect there, breaking's gone in and come back out again. It's not the only sport that happens to. So
Right.
we've got a longer term plan to say, okay, we've got LA 28. We're now already planning and have been. We've had a long runway in terms of Brisbane 2032. And we're even now thinking about 2036. And is that going to be India? And if it is, what's our policy going to be? What's our plan, the strategy going to be for that? So, this is a longer term thing. But as we were going through the whole process, you start it off and you've got a big questionnaire to fill in, and we can't do it on our own. This is a squash bid. It's not a WSF bid. It's a squash as a sport bid. And I think one of the real strengths and one of the really positive outcomes of LA 28 bid has been the collaboration between WSF, PSA, and US Squash. And there'll be doubters within even those organizations who are saying, why are we doing this again? Why are we doing this to ourselves again? But actually, pulling it all together is actually, there's a value in terms of doing that, in terms of saying, okay, well, this is a valuable exercise in its own right, strategically, in terms of what are our relative strengths? What can we achieve if we pull together our relative strengths? What does it look like in terms of the sport? And as we started to do that, so the stars started to align somewhat. And I think probably this was a bigger collaborative bid than we've ever done before, in terms of those three organizations in particular coming together and using their networks of other influences and to help support that process. So I think, and yes, they used their observation event was, in terms of timing and location, was the World Games in Birmingham, Alabama in July, and that was not going to be our strength. So, and as they initially were considering putting doubles in as well as singles, we said, look, come to the Commonwealth Games. That's our flagship. Come, it's only a few weeks later. Come to the Commonwealth Games. We won't be the only sport that can accommodate you, that you can see how they operate. And so, and they weren't going to come to the Commonwealth Games, but they did. They did in the end. And I think that really played to our strengths in lots of ways, for them to see the best of the sport, but not just the sport and the arena, and a showcase, but to understand a little bit more about the players as well, the top players, and the dynamics of singles and doubles, so I think that also played to her favor. So, there were lots of things, and within.
I was going to ask. U.S. squash is obviously. They've done so much for the game of late, and college squash there is huge right now. I'm going to be having Gilly Lane on, and he's like the big news these days. His school just won for the first time the U.S. squash college championship, and that's huge news in the U.S. I mean, they just seem to have a lot of momentum these days, U.S. squash. So that must have been tremendous to have them sort of working together with you and having L.A. as the potential place of squash for the first Olympic bid success.
No, and there's there are always the strengths and weaknesses, and the real strengths were, the strength of college squash and the East Coast and what they're doing in terms of where their women are sitting at the present moment, because in terms of world rankings, despite the strength, the huge strength of Egypt, then the USA are number two, and when the bid went in, they'd got four players in the world top 15. So they're very clearly ranked at number two, and then further went on to win the women's world team bronze silver medal, and within a couple of points of one of the matches, could well have pushed it to be a bit closer. So, that so there are some there are some there are some real strengths there, and US has got some very high net worth influential people as well, and you can see that in terms of the strength of the tour in the US, but it's not strong, our weakness. And right from the outset, we kind of felt, well, perhaps our weakness is that it's not strong on the West Coast. California isn't a strong squash area, but that then presents a huge opportunity. And the US squash have already grab that with both hands and are already starting to really make an impact in terms of the growth of squash in California and on the West Coast. So, so it's how, as you start to go through the process, you start to say, okay, from a strategic point of view, even in terms of the long-term vision of the sport, we can start to see where our strengths are, where some of the weaknesses are, and how we turn those weaknesses into opportunities. So, I think that's kind of what we did. And it won't it isn't common knowledge, and you won't be able to see it yet, but I think we did a really cracking presentation.
I've no
To
doubt, no doubt.
we really spent a lot of time and trouble and effort, and had a lot of support from friends of US squash in terms of the quality, the effort that we put into the presentation to LA 28, kind of probably just reinforced the seriousness and the diligence that we'd given to the process up to that point.
I mean, the people who had sort of given me the ray of hope were mostly from U.S. squash as well. They had this inkling that things might go our way, and obviously, there are a lot of good people in U.S. squash, and like you mentioned, the stars aligned, I guess, as you said earlier.
And because it flew below the radar, and it was all below the radar, there was a non-disclosure agreement signed, and any of the detail of that bid won't be available for quite a while yet, and so and that kind of helped us a relatively smaller sport like squash, because we're not a sport that can win a bid by throwing as much money to give it as much profile. And that's kind of been what's happened previously, where, it's been a battle of who can give their sport as much public profile and whatever.
You're
And
not going
we,
to be able to, we're not going to be able to compete with golf, are we?
golf or cricket,
That's huge. I mean, cricket's just
we're not
massive.
if it comes down to, and so the fact that it flew below the radar, and it wasn't, it was to keep stuff below radar and not spend money on a bid, not spend money on agencies and whatever. So, WSF you'll find not a penny registered in our accounts in terms of any money that we spent on it, because we didn't have that funding. And previously, a lot of money's been raised through WSF for previous bids that probably should have been spent in terms of the development of the sport, and because that was those were the rules of the game at the time. But the rules have changed, and that's helpful, really helpful. So that's the reason why
Brilliant.
it took people by surprise. It didn't take us by surprise, but it took other people by surprise. I mean, it was a lovely surprise when we got the
Absolutely.
link, but
I think the whole squash, I mean, the squash world was just elated once that news came out. So absolutely tremendous news, and congratulations on that. I just wanted to ask you, you and your team, you were in Switzerland recently, I guess the end of last month, for you were at the IOC headquarters, had meetings amongst yourselves, and I think amongst the various branches of the IOC there. So I was just wondering what came of those meetings, just in terms of your team, and I guess maybe even more interestingly, in terms of the IOC, the various branches that you met with them. How were the what were the discussions that were going on there?
It was our first physical board meeting for some time. We've been mainly online. Now, that has lots of benefits in terms of cost and in terms of carbon footprint, but we really did need to get together, and it was great that the IOC welcomed us to their Olympic House with they made us so welcome. It was great. It was great for our board because Williams worked in the Olympic arena before, because he worked for boxing, so he knows his way around Lausanne.
Williams, the
He's our
chairman.
chief executive. He's ch
Chief,
chief
yeah,
executive. Chief
chief, that's
executive.
right.
So he's our principal paid member of staff, whereas I'm the volunteer. So I have an understanding of the Olympics, but probably our other board members, not necessarily, because we're not a sport that's been, we haven't been in the Olympic family. So it was fantastic for them, and you could tell how hugely inspired they were, and to be in Lausanne, understand about Lausanne as the Olympic capital of the world, what's there, to visit Olympic House. And to have that opportunity of being addressed by a number of the IOC departments and ASWAF. James came to visit us in terms of ASWAF, to explain to us our future role within ASWAF, the Association for Summer Olympic International Federations,
Okay.
that we are likely to then become an associate member of.
Oh, great.
Whilst we're, you know, and so that so for the board to then understand where now squash aligns and fits within this new ecosystem that suddenly we become part of, because and to understand how fundamentally different that is, and what the new expectations are on us, and the higher level of support that we would then get from IOC and ASWAF, and going forward, so I think that was really crucial, and I hope that board members came away really inspired, as well as having
Judging from
lots
the pictures, I mean, it really looked like you were there as a team. It looked like a real team building, team moment for you guys. I mean, Kareem, obviously one of the greatest players in the history of the game, former world champion, great player, and he's done. It just seems to me like he's completely all in on this. It just shows, he shows so much passion for it. I've had him on the podcast about a year ago, and it was fascinating just to see hear him talk, and just how passionate he is and how well informed he is on everything. Not to, I didn't mention everyone else on the team because I'm not privy to all the other team members.
Well, Pablo Cern, who does understand the Olympic world, because he's operated in the Olympic world, and so he understands that. Dame Susan Devoy, from New Zealand,
Another
who
legend.
Yeah, absolutely. For 10 years dominated the top of women's squash in terms of world champion. So yeah, and but they got a much more a very different feel and understanding for what being part of the Olympic ecosystem and family now means. And you know, the first thing they wanted to do is they as we approached Olympic House was to stand in front of the Olympic rings in front of Olympic House and have a photograph taken, because you know that's it is you know, it's a milestone, it's another milestone really. So yes, that was and you know what came from the meetings, what came from the meetings was, I think we've already William and I had already met with various people, well, with ASWOF and with IOC departments twice already. Once when we were in Mumbai for the IOC session, very briefly, and again when we were at the IF Forum in Lausanne in November, which is another gathering of international federations over 2 days. So we're already, I think they would already regard us as being extremely proactive as a new kid on the block. We're very proactive. We're probably ahead of the game, but we don't underestimate the amount of extra work that's in front of us. And I think that's going to be, you know, there are higher expectations on us now in terms of conforming and so, you know, responding to some of the Agenda 2020 plus five, the IOC's strategy, in terms of some of the things that we need to step up now and accelerate some of the things that we're doing, whether that's about anti-doping, which we're already really, really quite good on, in terms of our governance self-assessments, in terms of our human rights self-assessments. There's lots of aspects there where, you know, we probably need to accelerate some of the work we do. But not only is it not just us as the World Squash Federation, or some of that also then starts to also encompass the PSA. So some of those exercises we need to do between us. And again, that's that further coming together of the two organizations in terms of working together more closely on a lot of not just the, you know, we worked extremely closely on the Olympic bid, but it's now what comes out of that in terms of some of the things that for the sake of the sport, it's about the sport, not just about WSF or PSA, but both together.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to mention that. I mean, just in terms of the higher expectations, obviously there are those. What if you can reveal anything? Are there going to be any implica obviously there will be implications for the game that that we see on squash TV, for example, or just for the game in general going forward?
Yeah, I mean it's in all facets really. Well, where do we start? Things like, well, we want to ramp up some of the technology and innovation in terms of our preparations, in terms of leading into LA28. Not a lot of things are gonna, not a huge amount's gonna happen until after Paris. That's when the new cycle starts that we're part of. So anything we do between now and Paris is kind of pre-preparation. But yeah, I mean, so it's about technology. How are we going to present squash to be very different in LA? I mean, we're as someone as we often say, you know, compared with other racket sports, we're three-dimensional. What we do that's really innovative, that really accentuates and emphasizes the fact that we're three-dimensional. We can do some exciting stuff there. And you know, so there's the presentation, but then there's also a lot of the stuff behind the scenes, such as refereeing. And you know, if you watched Chicago last week, you'll have seen a big step change in the policy and position of PSA in particular, in terms of power to the referees and player behavior. And because so often I get emails, wish I had a, you know, £10 for every email I had, saying what you're doing about player behavior, because this squash must be the only sport that allows players to answer back and argue with the referee. And you know, if you speak to the broadcasters like we did in New York at the TOC, you know, I happened to be sitting directly behind one of the major broadcasters in the US, who is, you know, and we had a conversation after a 2 hour, 15 minute kind of match that's got 61 decisions, and they turn around and say, "This is going to kill you if you try to do this in the Olympics." And, let's listen, ears, let's react. Chicago's very different. There's none of that.
No, exactly. You know, I couldn't agree. I mean, I watched most of that, and it was a much better product in my estimation, just in terms of watching it. And you don't want to take the personality away from the players too, because that's a huge part of our game as well. You get that, you get a look back at the referee and maybe a word or two, and that be done with it. And if that's
We could talk, Jerry, we could talk for hours about refereeing, and I have to be careful
Yeah, we
because
could.
I'm not leading WSO, but I try to have a big support for it. But if you get the right referee who's capable and confident, and you get the right players who are intelligent and have the right attitude, you get some fantastic banter going between them that really enhances what we do. But the problem is, if that goes pear-shaped and it goes wrong in a big way for the sport as a whole. It's how do you get the balance right with that? And there's a lot of work going, a lot of hard work going on about how we get that right, and we've got time to get it right. But the other aspect we have, we you know the other as we've got the aspect we've got to do is in terms of parity. So we've got lots of parity in terms of players, but where are the female international referees, other than
There's
Andrea,
one.
who was deliberately pulled through, and give hands up to her in terms of her escalation to the top of world squash and being one of the first paid professional referees. But she's a role model, and we need more female referees. And where are our female national coaches? So there are aspects there where the sport's still got quite a bit of work to do in terms of the world is moving, the sporting world's moving towards parity, gender parity, and there's still some work aspects there that we've got some work to do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's exciting to think about all this. I think just to end off on the officiating stuff, we've laid the groundwork there in Windy City, and I think going forward, it's just going to get better.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And there's quite a lot of hard work and some heartache that's behind the scenes. And
I'll reach out to Roy, and have Roy on. He's been on before, so that'll be, I'm sure, and he's so passionate about all this, isn't he?
Yeah, indeed. But they also get some grief from the players as well,
Oh gosh, it's
and
crazy, yeah.
they're having to deal with that as we are in transition, as the sport is in transition. But it's quite interesting, wasn't it, to see James Wilsdrop sitting there as a mentor in terms of Asal. And he,
Oh yeah.
I watched the match where he didn't murmur a word. He
No.
just took whatever decision and he carried on. So there's, you know, yeah, there's the, it's changing. It's changing, and it's good to see that.
That's great. Yeah, it's great to see it. The WSF has a 4-year strategy. I think we talked about it in the Growing the Game, the round table, and just in terms of growing the sport through enhanced partnerships. So where are we now with respect to the strategy?
Yeah, we're kind of halfway through, or just past halfway through. We reached the halfway point in our AGM last at the end of right at the end of last year. Yeah, we're progressing. I mean, it was, as many people said to us, "Gee, this is a very ambitious strategy for a relatively small organisation with 3.4 staff." And it is, but I think we have to be ambitious. But yeah, it is about partnership. We need to be kind of the conductors of the orchestra in terms of just working with partners. There are a lot of hugely talented entrepreneurial people out there who are doing some great things for squash, and we shouldn't be as arrogant as to think that we should be controlling and delivering it all, because we can't. I think we're an important part of the ecosystem, and I think we need to understand where we sit in that ecosystem and not try to control and think we can do it all, because but we have our I mean, partnership and bringing the sport together under a single vision is really important. Now we're having further discussions again, once again, with PSA about saying how can we potentially create an overall vision for the sport that brings those key players together. So we're really so that we become really clear on what's PSA's role, what's our role, and what are other partners' roles in delivering this going forward. There's no doubt that WSF needs more human resource in there. We need more paid people in there to help us and enable us to do that, to do more, and to accelerate the delivery of our strategy just that little bit quicker. Because we're reliant upon on commissions. And one of the things we have done over the last 12 months is we've reviewed our commissions and we've changed some of them and we've changed the composition of some of them. They're very much more skills based and they're more gender parity now. And that's helping us because, we're now able, it helps us leverage our resources a lot better when we've got commissions who are very capable and are, they're very they're professionals in their own right in their own area, but they're contributing pro bono into squash, which is fantastic. So we've just one of the things we discussed at our board meeting in Lausanne was our new commercial strategy because, we've got a great platform now. We have a fantastic platform in our new elevation to Olympic status to go out and make better use of that. And some of the things, some of the stuff we generate will maybe in kind help to help us move some of the things forward that we need, but some of it also about generating new revenue streams to help us potentially appoint at least one more, if not more, full-time people to just help William as the chief executive to leverage his time to deliver more and deliver a little bit quicker on things. But that's that partnership with PSA and with others, whether it's about Squash Levels or Squash Player App or lots of others, it I think that's where the value comes. But our strategic pillars are still there. Five strategic pillars: championships and events, squash development or development of the sport, business operations, effective leadership, and people and partnerships. So if you look at some of the things that we've been doing, if you take championships and events, we've got a new championships commission with a new chair who is keen to just review and change things, and that's Cyrus Puncher. And we've now brought men's and women's team championships together. The men's and women's junior team championships will have come together now, rather than getting to the end of the individuals and either all the boys go home or all the girls go home and everything goes flat. We'll maintain that impetus and that momentum. So I
Well, it
think
just makes
that's
it more exciting having it all together like that. And you bring all the best players. As you said, parity's a huge thing, and that I guess that's an element of that too, isn't it?
Well, I think they just love being together as well. But we're going to women's team event in Cairo, which was our first post-pandemic. William and I were there, and I'm saying, William, this is awfully flat. We've got an awful lot of spare time here, haven't we? Why are we doing these separately? And so, bringing it together, and people say, "Oh, you won't find venues that can find the capacity." But there are loads of venues that can do this. So, and it also has given us the opportunity as well of, in terms of listening to our members who are saying, we're struggling to get a physical AGM with enough members attending. So we're saying, right, this is the opportunity. We put the AGM and the conference alongside the men's and women's world team championships, and I think that will be. I think that's listening to our members and that's finding a way of making that happen. And I think that will be a fantastic event.
Just I guess along those lines, in terms of relationships with regional governing bodies and with the PSA, how are those relationships shaping up at the moment heading into 2028? I guess that regional governing bodies aren't always I guess, easy to access or maybe easy to work with, or is that I'm not sure if that's been your experience. That's just kind of.
I mean, because again, they have limited capacity. I mean, we've got five continental federations, and they're all very different in their geography and their politics and the makeup of their nations. They're all very different, and of course with their resources as well and how they might manage those. So they're all very different from the biggest and most financially wealthy, is Europe. Europe's a small, I mean, it's our biggest continent in terms of 46 nations, but it's a small village compared with, for example, Asia and Pan America. And then you've got Oceania, that's two nations plus a whole load of island nations. And that's a huge, challenge to manage. In terms of supporting those much smaller island nations. But
I
and
guess in a
then
lot of those nations too. I mean, you've got where play countries where squash is relatively. I mean, it's in its infancy almost. So you've got people or federations running the game that sort of. You've got a lot of new faces who've basically it's like first or second generation squash people, and that's also something maybe you have to overcome.
Yes, it is, and those nations are only ever going to be very small because they are very small. Look at Gibraltar; it's very small. Look at Cook Islands and Samoa, and they are probably only ever going to be quite small relative to the big players. But yeah, so that that's and if we they're also very autonomous. In reality, and now for an Olympic sport, that might not be the case because they've got significant funding that comes down from the Olympics, that comes down through ASWAF into the International Federation, and they've got enough funding to help the continental federations. Therefore, they have there's some accountability sitting in there,
Yeah, I was
but
going to say that that's got to help bring
we don't
everybody
have that.
together, right?
Well, that might help eventually, but the funding, we're not going to get funding coming down from Olympics for some time, and we need to be in probably two or three Olympics to benefit from that funding coming down, any significant funding coming down through from IOC down through ASWAF. But that relationship is really key. So if you take development of referees, for example, of all the things that we do, it's the one thing that needs to be top down, and it needs to have a common framework and common standards and delivery. And we're reliant upon the continental federations and then the national fed, and they supporting the national federations in terms of encouraging new people to come in through refereeing, because it's a bottom up, it's a top down framework, but it's actually a bottom up delivery and
Starts at the
development. So
club level.
there is that reliance. And I would always say, that from my involvement at club and county level in the UK, and then being chair of the national governing body, clubs and venues are the heartbeat of our sport. If clubs and venues are thriving, the sport will thrive. If clubs and venues are struggling, the sport will struggle. They are the heartbeat, but WSF doesn't have a direct relationship with clubs. We have to work through our national federations in effect to do that. And so the national federations are key, and their health and vitality is key. So if we can help to actually provide them with more tools and more support to be delivering certain key things for our sport, whether that's about coaching awards, referee training, encouragement now. I mean, the national federations are probably going to be the biggest beneficiaries of a new Olympic status. It's not necessarily going to be the International Federation, because it will be, as I've just described, it will be some time before, we need to stay in a couple of Olympics at least, maybe three Olympics, to actually get any significant funding streams coming down through from Olympics. But nations through solidarity funding through their national Olympic committees, the players and the national associations are the ones that are most likely to benefit from a new Olympic status. And I can remember when we were at the Pan American Games in early November, first week in November, that a National Federation representative came up and said, "You can't believe what a difference being Olympic is going to make to us." And as an example, one of our top players walked into his normal performance gym. He walked in the day after the Olympic announcement, and suddenly he felt 2 feet taller. He was in amongst a lot of other sports and other Olympic athletes. Suddenly he felt entirely different in terms of his state. He was one of them, and he was 2 feet taller as a result of that. I'm now Olympic sport. I mean, even that, and the motivation of players to say, okay, now I can have a shot at being Olympic. And then the negotiation of funding and support through their NOC and the different status.
It's gonna really I mean, the game's just going to get better and better and better as a result, not only from what we see in terms of players that we see, but just overall everything related to this success of getting into LA 28. It's just going to have a huge, hugely positive, obviously, impact on all aspects across the board, isn't it?
Absolutely, and before we've even, taken a few small steps forward towards LA 28, that's the importance of why we need to also focus on Brisbane 2032, because of the importance to the sport. I mean, there are benefits to being in one Olympics even, and you can talk to World Dance about break dancing being in LA, but not, sorry, being in Paris, but not being in LA. There are benefits, but the benefits to staying in there are huge, so. That's equally important. So lots and lots of benefits. So and coming back to our strategy, what it does for our strategy is it just enables us to accelerate it. It gives us a bigger springboard to really move forward on our strategy. But yeah, that has to be in partnership with lots of others. And there's going to be an awful lot of extra work. Whilst we can see all the opportunities, there's also a lot more work involved. And I think I'll even look at the WSF staff, and they've already been bursting. They've always already been pushing the boundaries in terms of workload. So, and there's going to be
You
a bit
guys
more.
must feel 2 feet taller as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fantastic for the sport. But there are going to be some challenges, some new challenges in there as well of being Olympic. And
Oh, for sure.
but I think we're up to it. And again, we're up to it. We're working in still in very close collaboration, and we will be all the way through to LA 28, working in really close collaboration with PSA and US Squash and all of the skills and the resources and the experience and the networks that they also have to bring to add to WSFs. And we each have a distinctive role in that. And we understand it's that understanding of the fact of what each of us can bring to that, and to remain collaborative and keep listening and working together.
No, I think it's going to bring not only those parties, but just everyone in squash. I mean, it's going to bring everybody together. Let's make sure that we continue this, beyond 28, obviously. That's the goal. You got the World Team Championships coming up in December in China, and this is
No, Hong
fantastic.
Kong. In Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
In Hong Kong, and obviously that's huge as well. Is this a, I guess, an opportunity maybe to put a few more pieces to LA to the test?
Yeah. I mean, it's fair. That'll be fairly early days, because much of what we're, planning now probably won't transpire until, early 2025, it's a team event, but it'll still give that it's still that extra level of excitement, isn't it? And I think the buzz that we will get from our from bringing men's and women's together, from having our conference, and it's not just a WSF conference. We want to make this not just for our member nations, but we want to make it for squash as a whole. So we may well be doing some more stuff in partnership with PSA on that and other partners.
You're going to have a bit, you're going to have a conference in Hong Kong
Yes.
with the other, with as many member nations as possible, I guess.
Yeah, well, and also making sure we're inviting other partners, you
Yeah.
know. Previously it's been the WSF conference, but I think we want to make this a squash conference, but to get as many member nations and other partners there as possible. But yeah, I mean, I think some of the stuff that we're working on will probably, some of the more innovative stuff will probably get probably tested out on some PSA events, because
Right.
they're the ideal ones to perhaps do that with.
Technology related stuff.
So, you know, what can we do with walls and floors and goodness knows what else? You know, it's a
Well, the product they have out there now is it's really good anyways, in terms of, the board itself. It just seems to get better every time I see a new event. It just improves. So
There's still lots we can do there. There's still lots that we want to do, that we're discussing, you know, what's possible. And you know, it is the idea is that we distinguish squash from other racket sports in terms of what can be done, that we deliver a really spectacular experience, spectator experience, and take the sport to a different place in terms of that player and spectator appearance, and fan experience,
Yeah, in
whether
terms of, I mean,
that's live or.
just to camp out there for a second, I mean, squash, it's unlike any other racket sport, isn't it? I mean, racquetball may be similar to a certain degree, but I mean, you've got rallies that go on for, a couple of minutes sometimes, and two players in the same vicinity. It's a very physical game. It's unlike, tennis has its merits, but it's unlike any other racket sport in that. In that respect, isn't it? So that's kind of what
It's a
we're
bit of a
looking
racket
at.
combat sport, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's akin to boxing, but
Put it in
not
a cage,
that.
maybe, or something.
Perhaps so. Yeah, but we've got walls. Yeah, well, you know, but we are a three-dimensional racket sport, not a two-dimensional, you know, and that brings all kinds of opportunities.
Yeah.
But you know, there's lots of other technology that we could be implementing that I think will just get accelerated now, and let's see what we can do. So, yeah, good, some good opportunities there.
Absolutely. So Hong Kong, exciting stuff for the world teams, and that's it. Hong Kong's has a huge squash history in and of itself. I mean, they've been. I love. I've played there several times myself, and the venues that they have and the squash community they have there, and in the history, they've also had a very successful national program over the last 20, 30 years.
And I think that's you know, it's all, but don't forget, it's now Hong Kong, China, and it's a gateway to China, and China, let's watch and see what China are going to do going forward. But you know, that's going to be a really important market for us going forward. Just
Just
as, you
that
know,
whole Asian market too, isn't it?
absolutely,
Korea,
you know, China, India.
I have friends in South Korea, and I see the different facilities that are going up, and they're like huge. These squash complexes are huge there.
Yeah. Well, William and I were at the Asian Games in end of September, beginning of October, and the Asian Games, and they'd built, I mean, it should have taken place the year before, and they'd already built the venue, but it was seven all glass courts. They just built everything else, so the event infrastructure around seven all glass courts, and it was spectacular. They called it Crystal Palace,
Oh, wow.
and that's, you know, it was, and it just shows, you know, what can be done, and you know that China has a real appetite now for growth, and now that squash is on the Olympic program, you know, they've got a relatively small program for scale of nation, but you know, I think squash will grow quite quickly, and we'll start to see Chinese players appear on the radar, and let's just see. But in that respect, yes, Hong Kong, China has, as a federation, it has you know, a long and very proud heritage in squash, and it's great. It will be great to be back in Hong Kong, but you know, the proximity to and the links to China are also, you know, equally important.
Yeah, very exciting stuff. Now, you've been great with your time, Zina. I just wanted to ask you about the big in June. I get the squash summit that's coming up in June, and I'm going to be having Adriana on the podcast in a couple of weeks to, just to flesh it all out. But you're going to be there participating, and so what would what can we expect from you at that event at the
Well,
summit?
okay. So yeah, the summit is something that the Squash, the PSA Foundation has been trying to launch for a couple of years now, and they're originally going to wanted to do it. I think it was last year in Chicago, didn't quite get all the pieces and the right support. So they're going to try again in Birmingham, and so WSF were keen to support what they were trying to do because. One of the questions we'd asked is, we need to keep some of these topics moving because having just a one-off event is okay and let's talk about things and whatever, but there've got to be some actions from it and then some follow-up. And, so if we do something in June and then we've got our conference in December around the WSF AGM and the World Cheap Team Championships, we can keep some of these discussions moving and make sure that there's some actions in between. So yeah, so that again a collaborative approach. So WSS is supporting the PSA Foundation on the summit in June, and we'll invite the PSA Foundation, the PSA, to support our conference in December. So we're again it's seeing this collaboration. But yeah, the subjects are about the Olympics. Obviously, people have got lots of questions about it, and we can't answer them all at the moment. Because we've still got some pieces to put in place, and there's a time scale that's set by LA28 and the IOC. But yeah, that but we'll have a session on the Olympics, and then something about innovation as well, innovation in the sport. So I think all of these are topical subjects at the present moment. So I think it's just good to bring the sport together.
Absolutely. And then, as you mentioned, in Hong Kong, China, you guys can meet again, and some of these topics you can flesh out even more and build on between now and then.
And hopefully by the time we get to December, we may have a joint overall umbrella vision for the sport as a whole that starts to bring the relevant parts of WSF's and PSA's strategies together in one whole vision.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, Zina, have we left anything out? Anything you wanted to add to that? Because you've been great with your time. Really enjoy talking to you about all this stuff.
And I think that's most of it really, and yeah, we're just conscious we've got a lot of hard work going, a lot of hard work coming forward, and we need as much help as we can possibly get, and I think there are more people now coming to us and saying, how can we help?
Yeah, I mean, just on behalf of the entire squash community, many thanks for all that you and the WSF have done. And I know there'll be a lot of people willing to help contribute to what we're doing going forward. So many thanks for today, Zena. And let's do it again at some point down the road.
Okay. Thanks very much, Sherry. Yep.
Take care.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.